I am very excited to say that this podcast was brought to you with support from the Arts Council England's National Lottery Projects Grants.
Hello, I'm Gabrielle Scawthorne and this is Back From Reality. When I was 17 years old, my dad smuggled me out of a school excursion so that I could line up for hours at my local Westfield to audition for the reality television show Fresh Meat, where I would be competing to be a presenter on Channel V, which sounds pretty legit. But when you're plucked from suburban obscurity and thrust into the public eye in a world of sex, drugs and rock and roll, and you're not even legal, shit goes down. What happened over the next few months shaped the rest of my life in ways that I'm still discovering today. In this series of podcasts, I will be speaking with a different guest each week from the world of reality television. These chats will cover the highs and lows of the reality TV experience, how their lives have changed as a result, and what it's like to come back from reality. My guest today is Christy Bennett. This was a very difficult and challenging interview for me, the hardest I've had to do yet, because I am such a Survivor fangirl. I am currently pitching to Hugo that we live off a bowl of rice and drink the dirty water from the bathroom tap whilst holding a 5 kilogram plate in the air for the entire duration of our Sydney quarantine period as a form of Survivor training. I fell in love with Survivor through Christy Bennett's season. The clip you may have seen on my Instagram promoting this week's episode is me breakdown sobbing during her final immunity challenge. So when sole survivor Christy Bennett popped up on my computer screen ready to chat, I had to take some deep breaths and focus very hard on not proposing marriage. So please, enjoy my rendition of not being a fangirl to sole survivor Christy Flippin' Bennett. So I have absolutely fallen in love with Survivor through your series. Your series was the first actual experience that I had, and I consumed it in about 3 days.
Oh my God.
I cancelled social events. I stayed in. It was like the best lockdown companion ever because I could not look away. And the thing that I was kind of, especially with your story, is that it seems like for most competitors, it is a lifelong goal to be on that show. It's an institution, a very respected institution. So I was just wondering, like, what Survivor meant to you before you were even on the show?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for binging my show. It's more of like an honor to me because now I feel like I'm giving you the gift that I got given when I was a kid, because that's where it all started for me. I was watching the US series with my dad. My parents had just gotten divorced, so Dad thought it was a really good idea to, you know, get into something together that we could talk about and learn. And nobody knew what this show was going to be, but it involved all the elements, you know, pushing yourself, people out on a deserted island, like really surviving. But it was also a game, so it was competitive. And I've always been really adventurous and very competitive, always playing sports, involved in everything, like schoolhouse captain, the whole shebang. So my dad and I would sit and watch and listen to it, and we'd talk about the strategy and how this guy Richard Hatch, the original winner of the US season, just came up with this idea of an alliance, you know, of you don't have to randomly vote, which is what everyone was doing. Like, how are we going to vote? How are we going to decide to get rid of somebody? Somebody was doing it with the alphabet. Somebody was, you know, just, I don't like this person. And he decided that he was going to make like a little group of people and they were going to vote together, and no one knew what was going on. Anyway, that was like, wow, like, look at how people come up with different solutions. But the thing that like committed me to playing Survivor was the end challenge in that first season. It was actually the same challenge, pretty much almost the same challenge that I ended up doing in my season, but a much easier version, so a hand on idol. And intuitively, everyone would just think, you know, you want to win the challenge, you want to win the immunity necklace, like that's guaranteed. But this guy voluntarily lifted his hand off and stepped down out of the challenge. And everyone was like, what are you doing? This is mental. The host was like, what have you just done? And he explained why he lifted his hand off. And And it was better for him to lose the challenge so he could win the entire game than to win that challenge, because he was going to lose if he had to take the other person who he would have had to have taken. And he would have, the only way that he could get to the end is if he lost the challenge, which is bizarre. Anyway, in that moment, I turned to my dad and I said, one day I'm going to get on Survivor and win. And it just felt right.
And you were what, 9?
I was 8 years old.
8 years old. And it's so interesting that you'd fallen in love with this game that is all about surviving when you were going through quite an emotional turmoil of your own and surviving in your own way. And interesting to hear too that the game of Survivor is shaped by its competitors. So the whole kind of format now is that you have alliances, and to think that that came from the competitors and not the actual producers is kind of boggling. And so you, as a competitor, have this opportunity to shape the game and to make your part of history as well. So tell me about the selection process. What did they put you through to get on the show?
Oh, man, a lot. But that point that you mentioned about how you do have a lot of control over the stuff, that's one of the big things that I always have to tell people about, is that it's very different to other reality TV. You ask any producer who's there, you ask any competitor if they've ever been involved in anything else, anyone in the media, and anyone who's ever worked on the show or been on the show, it's very different to The Bachelorette, to any of them, because it is all about the contestants, and the contestants are what makes it happen. Like, no one tells you what to do. You create that own world and you come up with these ideas yourself. Nobody plants anything. But the process of auditioning. So the process was so rigorous. Like, if you think writing a resume for your job is hard, imagine having to write a 10-page answer booklet and then make a video and share all your deepest, darkest secrets. That's just to get your application in. And once you get your application in, some people get a call in like the next day. Like Kat from my season got a call the next day. For me, I had to wait like 2 months or something to hear back from anyone. And I was actually in Canada when I found out, and my brother made this video because we were at this bus stop in the middle of Banff, and I was like, oh my God, I got a call to go in. And I almost missed it. I almost missed my audition because I was... we missed our flight from Canada back to Australia. And I was like, this is my life dream. Like, why? Why is this happening? Anyway, we made it back and it was the last day of auditions. And it was a group audition. Apparently, I skipped a step because you're meant to do like a Skype call before that. But because they couldn't get a hold of me, I was skiing on the slopes. So just like, yeah, come in. I was like, sweet. Had no idea till I got on the island that I'd missed a spot, but that's cool. And then it's like you do have this big group audition. I can't go into too much detail about it, but it's like a couple of hours of, you know, just how you interact with people and respond to different situations. And then if you get a call back, you go in the next day, and then that's like a one-on-one with like everyone, like all the top dogs that you have no idea who they are, but all the top dogs of the production company, the TV show. And then after that, it's 3 months of psych tests, doctor's appointments, phone calls with producers, talking about how you're going to play your game or not. And at every stage, there's no certainty. You'll be like, so am I on or what? And then they're just like, oh, we'll contact you back. And then one day in the middle of like lunch, you'll be getting the call. And then one day I knew that it was getting really close to when they had to go, because they had told a certain amount of contestants, like, you're in the mix, like make sure you're available on these dates just in case, you know, you get chosen. And I remember where I was sitting like at this like a non-desk in my bedroom because I didn't really have a desk. And I was like just staring blankly out the window, and she was like, are you 100% in? And I was like, am I 100% in? Hell yeah. And she's like, you're on. So it's not an easy process. It's really long and there's a lot of uncertainty.
Had you seen any of the actual like final contenders in your group audition?
Yeah. So there were heaps of other contestants. It was real crazy. So Jenna Louise, aka JL, amazing. I love her so much. She and me were in the same group audition and we butted heads like crazy. Like, I never wanted to see that girl again after my audition, and I saw her. on the truck and she was wearing the same outfit from her audition, like together. And I was just like, can't trust her.
Wow. Do you think that maybe helped that you guys butted heads and they were like, great.
Totally. We've spoken about it afterwards. And we like intrinsically knew that we were helping each other get on the show by just like leveling up, because no one else in our group was leveling up, you know, to what, you know, people want to see. And we just fueled each other and we thanked each other after the show for doing that.
And you were saying that actually you knew that the date that they had to go away was coming up really soon. So from the time that you find out to the time that you, what time frame are we talking here?
Oh, very short. Like, I think it was like a month.
How do you train? Do you start training kind of already in the audition process? Like, how were you preparing?
Yeah, for me, I had this like weird moment maybe a year before where I just decided, you know, I didn't know Survivor was coming. No one knew. Like, it kind of just popped out of nowhere. But I just decided I'm going to go full out. I'm going to get really into my fitness. I was doing F45 like 6 days a week at 5:55 a.m., catching a bus in to do my advertising in the city and then coming home. So I was actually already really fit, probably the fittest I'd ever been in my life. But then as soon as my best friend sent me the link and I applied, I was training. Because in my head, I was like, I'm going to get on the show. Like, I was just convinced. I was self-convinced. So I was already training. But I did pick up a lot more training of things that I didn't really think about. So in that that little stretch between when I actually knew, like confirmation from the producers and going to the island, I actually resigned from my job about a week and a half or 2 weeks before, because I was like, I'm all in. I think I'm going to get on. If I don't, I'm moving to Canada.
What was that exit interview like? I mean, were they just like, Christy, are you sure?
Yeah, they didn't even know I was going on the show. Because I was like, I'm either moving to Canada or getting on the show. And I didn't want the pressure of all my friends, because I was really great friends with all of my work colleagues, asking me about it before I went. So I was just like, I'm moving to Canada. And everyone was like throwing me like farewell parties. I was like, oh my God, this is so bad.
And you were saying that like there were things that you hadn't even thought about that you had to then prepare for, like what kind of, what elements are they?
So the big one for me was like meditation, because the game of Survivor is like a massive player in your mind, because the majority of the time you're thinking about what is everyone doing? What are they thinking about me? Are they talking about me? Is that person lying? Blah, blah. So you needed to get your head in a space where you could find just a moment of clarity of thought. Otherwise, you know, when you're really stressed, you can't think clearly. So I spent a really long time practicing doing that. It didn't really work a whole lot, a lot of the time, because, you know, it's just so extreme. But it did help when it came to challenges a lot. And then same with like endurance things, and getting control of different parts of my body was a big thing, because I knew I was never going to like outfight somebody. Like, I knew there was always going to be, you know, the like Lee Castledine and Rowan, like the big bulldozers in there. So I was like, my strength is going to be, you know, having control of my body in endurance stuff. So I would like try and move like certain parts of my toes, like individually, which isn't what you really think of when you think of Survivor. But I felt like I had a grip on the other stuff. So that was the new stuff that I was adding to my regime.
Are you consulting with, you know, because there's this great show that was here called Quiz, the BBC did it, and it's about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And I didn't realise there are all of these like coaches that will get you onto Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Are there Survivor coaches? Are there consultants and specialists that you can go to and get a leg up?
Not when I was applying, that's for sure. I think Nick had already met a few Survivor contestants previously, where he'd gotten, you know, some information, and other contestants had relationships, you know, from being super fans and contacted them for advice. These days, like, if I wanted to know anything about Survivor, I'd be lucky enough to, you know, just call up the winner of a series in the US and be like, hey, what about this? How was Winners at War, you know? But at the time for me, no, but I know there is now, just from my exposure to other contestants in the US, because it's really big. Most contestants in the US only get on because they have not a casting agent, but I don't know what they call them exactly. It's not a casting agent, but it's a person who puts your video in and then they get like a commission if you get on the show, but they talent source people. And the probability of getting on is like 90 compared to like 10. I only know one contestant in the US who got on by doing, you know, just an audition themselves without one of these people suggesting to like the production team. But like for me and all of the contestants on my season, we all just, you know, a friend knew, sent us the link for the application and filled out the form, which is crazy now that I think about it. I'm like, what the hell? Like, obviously the TV production crews and stuff, they're putting big bucks in there. Like our season was like $26 million or something to make. Like they want the right people. So it obviously makes sense that they go out and pick up the tried and tested, but nah, not for us.
And the game is about strategy. I mean, that is the most kind of key element. What was your strategy going in? You said that you were kind of taking stock of yourself physically. And so how did you prepare strategy-wise to go in?
So strategy-wise, I'd always been, you know, building on that, talking about it with my dad. Like we'd always talked about different things, but I've spent a lot of time. This is something that I said in the final tribal, but it didn't make the cut. So this is kind of interesting. Nick was like hounding me. He asked way more than one question in that final tribal. But he said, when you do like a podcast or an interview, what are you going to say on this question, essentially? And I was like, you know what? I studied all the do's and don'ts of the winners in the US. I think that was my absolute key on top of my natural instinct for loving like statistics and the probability of, you know, winning if you find an idol or not. I studied a lot of that stuff, which nobody really looks at. I bought like a whole book that somebody wrote about it for Survivor, just so I had that on me. But I studied the do's and don'ts of, you know, Sandra, Bob, all the big US players, and took the best ones out of them and applied that. So for me, the universal thinking was like, at the end of the day, somebody's going to go home. Just make sure it's not you. And make sure you're responsible for that.
So you can have all of this prep and all of these plans, and then you're actually on that island. And what struck me, especially in your series, more so than the other Australian ones I've been watching, is just the physical discomfort reality that is Survivor. Those first nights when you're just kind of left to the elements, are you freaking out? Like, how do you acclimatize to that discomfort?
Yeah, you are freaking out. Like, you're totally freaking out because all those coconut videos and machete videos on how to perfectly open a coconut in 30 seconds don't work for you. And then you're like, what am I gonna eat? Like, I am thirsty. And you don't realize, like, you think you need fire to start drinking the water, but then you start drinking the water anyway because you're like, I'm going to die without the water. But you kind of just hit that beach and go, oh my God, I am living on the sand. The first night it's like, cool, yeah, this is fun. Yeah, shelter sucks. And it's a bit awful because it's raining a little bit, but it's not too bad. But by like third, fourth day, you're just so insanely uncomfortable. You can't even comprehend the amount of pain it is to sleep because you don't even sleep. I think the first week I maybe slept like 3 hours because your shelter, like it looks quite comfortable on TV, but realistically they're just big hunks of tree and they're all bent out of shape with little things poking into you. It's just like sleeping on the worst futon you've ever sat on.
And sorry, you were saying, like, is there no clean drinking water?
So the water is the big well that you always see people chatting around, but stuff crawls in there, you know, like it's a source of water, relatively clean, like, but you have bugs in your drink bottle all the time, like little creepy crawlies, like sometimes not a possum, but you know, like a little lizard crawls in there and dies. And then you're like, oh God, there's a little dead thing in there. So it's not dirty like mud, but it's not tap water, that's for sure.
There are so many of these
Do you mind? Sorry, I just have a very quick list of like practical things.
Go for it.
Okay, cool. I'm just gonna like fire them at you. Toilets. What are we doing for toilets?
Hole in the ground.
No, okay, because, you know, obviously I am now a super fan and my husband has popped the question of, do you want to go on Survivor? The first thing I said is, how do I tackle a period on the island? And if you feel uncomfortable talking about this, I totally get it. But, like, how does a woman deal with a period?
Oh, no, don't even worry about it. That's what we all thought. We're all like, oh, my God, I'm going to get my period. How embarrassing, how annoying. There's going to be all these stresses and then is going to be going on. By like day three, day four, you realize it's not going to happen because your body is just, you feel your body shut down. Like you actually feel your organs shutting down. And the first one go is reproduction. Cause it's like, well, if you can't survive, get rid of that. Like you're not going to be reproducing and providing for two. So, none of the girls got their periods at all. I didn't get my period for like over 3 months after the show. And I was so excited when I got it back.
Oh my gosh, that's the level of trauma on your body.
Your body goes through beyond comparable trauma of actual starvation. Like you think you're hungry in normal life and then you really know what hunger and starvation actually is when you're out there.
Okay, well, like, pleased to hear that the problem of period is solved. However, much bigger problem arises with that period. Okay, we can tick that one off. How many crew members are around when you're filming?
A lot. It depends. When you're on the beach, it is a lot smaller. The camera crew follows you everywhere 24/7. There is zero privacy unless you're going to the toilet. They'll, like, stand outside the toilet waiting for you to come back out, basically. Because it's like a designated toilet area. So, you know, people don't walk into that. In saying that, it's not always used. But yeah, so probably on the beach, just like a camera, a sound guy and a producer per camera. And then depending on if you're going to tribal or not, more cameras. I know a few producers who have, shared photos and stuff. So I feel okay talking about this. So I'd probably say like 5 or 6 cameras per beach, but then everything else is invisible, but it feels invisible. No one talks to you. Like you don't even notice that they're there because they just exist. And then they are there all the time and they don't talk to you. But when you go to a challenge, there's like, I don't even know how many, I felt like 300, but probably like 150 people all in charge of building the stuff and they're watching, making sure that everything's built, and then just heaps of cameras all over the course, but everything's out of the way. And again, the first time when you go to a challenge, it's like, oh my God, am I standing in front of like an audience on a stage? But then after that, you don't even notice. It's crazy. Like I remember watching Big Brother and thinking, don't these people realize that they're being filmed sometimes because they've just done something stupid? And then I was like, this is why, because after day three, you don't even notice. It's just like any object in your house. Like you don't think about your washing machine, like being there all the time, but it's like that with the camera crew.
And are there locals just walking around? Like, do you ever see someone who's not associated with Survivor?
There's actually heaps and heaps of locals that like work for the show and that will like be there as like almost guides for the producers and stuff. But then they're employed. Oh, what did they say? I think it was like half of the crew is from the country. So for us, Samoa. But you don't see like normal life people because everything is closed off. Like you are out in the middle of nowhere. This is your beach. You don't leave that area. Like I hadn't seen a light. I didn't see like humans. I felt like it was just our tribe of 4 people. There's literally no aspect of real life that you see ever at any point.
So when you're walking to a tribal or a challenge, you are actually walking. Because I was like, oh, maybe they just walk up to a car, get in a van and then drive to another set. Like, but are you actually, is that real? Are you actually walking?
No.
Okay. Okay.
That's the only part which is like, I guess, real life. And I was really surprised too. Like being a super fan, I was like, fuck, I'm going to have to walk an hour and a half to this bloody tribal council and then we'll have to walk back, you know, in the dark. How am I going to do it? And then I was like, oh, cool. But it's not comfortable. It's not nice. Like it's not Like, everywhere you go that's not the beach or, like, a challenge or, like, part of the Survivor world, you're blindfolded.
Sorry, excuse me?
Yeah. You're blindfolded. A lot of the time, you're blindfolded and you can't speak to anyone because if it's not on camera, it didn't happen.
Oh my gosh, they want you in that world. So, like, they don't want anything to kind of remind you.
Yeah, you're spot on. They want you in that world the whole time. They don't want a second of you broken or not thinking about the game or what's going on inside the game.
Is there a psych around that you can have access to?
Yes, there is a psych. And he's wonderful, he's amazing, but you can't just be like, oh, I need to speak to the psych and then go talk to the psych then and there. There's a big process of it and no contestant really ever speaks to them at all. I think we do get health checked every time there's a challenge or if anything health related, like there's somebody on standby, you can... Like, if you burn your foot or something, they're not going to aid you unless it's critical. But there's always somebody there to make sure that you're safe in that regard. But with the psychology stuff, no. Like, that on day three when I was just, like, you only saw a small part of it, but I was really, you know, messed up in the head. I was, like, demanding to see him and he didn't show up. But again, it's they want you in that world. So unless it's, like, there's a serious health risk, then they just want to push it out until it's, like, the limit, which is really dangerous. I think it's really dangerous.
So do you think that they were purposely withholding that medical help from the psychologist for you to kind of elevate the feelings that you were going through?
Yes. I do, particularly at the beginning. I definitely think that, like, in some ways these days, I'm more forgiving of it because no one really knew what they were doing. Like, the crew had, most of them had never worked on the show. They didn't know the formatting. Nobody understood the extent to it because they never, like, had people in that environment before. And I get that. But at the same time, I definitely felt like they were intentionally holding it back because they wanted to capture something.
This moment that you're talking about, it is kind of made reference to by some of the other contenders really laid on in the piece. I think Lee kind of said towards the end, you know, I saw what Christy went through in the beginning and that really bonded you. Do you mind kind of unpacking what happened? Was there a big mental obstacle for you that you had to get over? Or
yeah, for sure. In my mind, it's, you know, I lived it, and so I'm kind of like, everyone kind of saw it and knows it, but like they only saw bits of it. And essentially I kind of got to the island and it was like my ultimate life goal. I'm here on the beach, and it became too much for me. I felt like I was hallucinating and not in this planet because I'd waited 20 years to play this game, and then I was there and I was like, is this reality? Is this not? And then I wasn't sleeping, we weren't eating, and it all got triggered by the bag. I'd already been like frazzled and stuff, but then I felt like this bag had been stolen because Des was stealing stuff and nobody was helping me. And then I just went, like, it was all too much. I couldn't think. I was overwhelmed. I was trying to play this game, but I couldn't think. And I literally had a mental breakdown. It was like the first time that I really full on knew that something was seriously wrong and that I was having a full blown panic attack, but I didn't know that's what it was. And so I was seeing things, hallucinating, like screaming at people, yelling at the production crew, like telling people to fuck off and stuff. Just because I feel like I couldn't relax and you have all these people around you and it's like, I just wanted a minute to myself and I just wasn't allowed to have a minute to myself. And then I just realized that I wanted it so badly that I was just being a total perfectionist. But it was just like Elle calls it, I get like these crazy eyes, and it's just me being in like a total state of anxiety where I can't see beyond my own brain. Like, it's like when you get stuck in your own head. And so what actually ended up happening is this, I don't know if this ever happened again, but I kind of figured it out afterwards. We were meant to go to tribal council the night before, and I'd also had a bit of like a freak out then because I was like convinced I was going to get voted out even though I wasn't. And they cancelled it they cancelled the tribal council because they were really concerned about my mental health. But I didn't know that until after the show. I don't know if that really explains it. It's kind of like crazy, you know.
No. I mean, it is just strange that they were kind of purposely withholding this psych that you desperately seem to need, but then they would cancel a tribal, which would affect filming. So it seems, but I guess it's as you were saying, they didn't even understand what they were doing at the time. You weren't allowed to get your medical help. What brought you back? How did you get back on track?
I got back on track really because I trusted Kat. Kat was so genuine. We were attached at the hip. I never lied to her. She never lied to me. I knew that she was like ruthlessly herself no matter what. So I kind of knew that somebody had my back. And I also just tried to remember that no matter what happens, my family want me to be there. Like they want that for me and that I'm just going to have to find a way. It was kind of like I just was forced to kind of get it under control. But it wasn't under control, like because everyone was suffering it. People who'd never had mental health problems were super paranoid, over the top, like just another dimension of mind games. Like everyone on the show of every season ever in the US and Australia comes out with mental health problems. It's guaranteed because of the extremity of the situation and the nature of how it changes your beliefs of how people and humanity is. You kind of go, everyone's against me. And then you bring that with you into real life. Also, the other thing was when I had my big, like the biggest one was at the beginning and the anxiety attacks and panic attacks continued throughout the show at different periods in sort of lesser form, but it was still something that I just had to figure out. But I really realized, I was like, oh, that's the other thing. After I had my big meltdown and you see me crying and Elle comes over, Elle came over to me and told me that I just had an anxiety attack. And I was like, what the hell is that? What's anxiety? I didn't even know what it was because she had experienced really intense mental health problems in her life. And she's very active and in this environment. She's got a really great little Instagram page called Bells of the Ashes, I think that's what it's called. She could explain to me what had happened. And I was like, oh my God, I've been living with this since I was 8. And I never knew because I didn't even know what anxiety meant.
Right. When you roughly started watching the show, when you had a big kind of upheaval in your own life. So all of these kind of butterfly effect, full circle things are coming to you when you're stuck on a deserted island with strangers.
Exactly right. The best time for it to come out, right?
But it seems strange to me, you know, you were saying that there is this very clear history in all of the American seasons of people having mental health issues. So therefore, it is a precedent that this game induces that. So it seems strange to me that they would withhold mental health medical attention from you if this is known that there will be mental health side effects.
Yeah. For sure. I don't know if they knew at the time the extent to it because it's kind of like natural for the US has got it a lot more under control now. But part of the show is seeing how people respond when they're pushed to the edge. And part of the show that I really love is how you do get to see how people transform as if they are there by themselves. Like, yes, it's a TV show, but I love that you get to see it as if they were really there just themselves and what they come up with. It is dangerous and there is beauty in it, but there's also a lot of danger in it because there have been contestants in the US which have, you know, it's just gone that little bit too far. It's like that balance of like, we're trying to show what survival is and what it's really about and the extent to people push themselves because that's what Survivor's about, like pushing yourself in every way possible, like mentally, physically, emotionally, all of that. But then it's also like these are people's lives as well. Like this can really mess somebody up.
Did they tell you about these possibilities before you went in?
Not to the extent that I would now tell somebody who's going on. Like if somebody was going on, that would be the number one thing that I would tell them to prepare for. In any way that they can. You know, your mental health and strength is your biggest asset in Survivor. for sure.
I mean, you mentioned before that it's this game that gets you to see what humanity actually is. And I imagine trust is so difficult in that game because you've got to make these alliances, but then you've got to betray them at some point, or you've got to do this wheeling and dealing. How did that weigh on you mentally? A, doing the betrayal, but then also being on the receiving end?
Oh, man, yeah. I thought I was really prepared for it. I was like, I'm not going to have a single friend here. It's going to be all good. We're going to be friends and then bye. I don't need any more friends. And then I got there and I was just like, there's this weird clash that you're always fighting with of who you are as a person and the values you hold and what needs to be done for the game. And you can either choose to play the game and drop your real life values and know that you're the same human in the real world, or you play with your values and bring that into the survivor world. And I was real torn between the two. So in the end, I just went real extreme and was like, I'm not going to make an alliance with anybody because I want to be responsible for voting everyone out. So I'm going to pick my one person and I'm never going to vote them out because it will bloody kill me to do it. I won't feel terrible because I haven't committed to anybody, which served me, but it also didn't serve me. And there were people that I did make commitments to and I turned on, like Sue acknowledges in the final trouble. She's like, Christy, you're a naughty girl. And I was like, I'm sorry. And I knew I was sorry. But I told her that I was voting for her before we went, you know. So the way I kind of got around my personal values and guilt of it was by being direct when I could be, which, bloody hell, it almost cost me an arm and a leg on so many occasions. But I only ever like fully committed to not voting the person out for Kate and Kat. And I never did that. But the betrayals, oh man, they bloody suck. Like when Phoebe came after me, like, man, I was really hurt. I was like real mad. And like I've forgiven her now, but it took me a really long time to get over that. Like, it hurt. And I let her know after the game that it bloody hurt.
And then you've got all of these, the literal elements, the mental games that are going on. And then on top of everything, first priority, actually, from the production side of view, is it's a television show. How did you reconcile those two? And was it ever a concern of yours of how is this being portrayed?
So, like, yeah, you're right. In the contestant's mind, it's like, is my priority to make sure that I'm alive or that I'm playing this game? And most of the time, the contestants just forget about the fact that they have to actually live and are focused on playing the game. But at the end of the day, there is a point where you kind of get in a war with production because, you know, they want you to be playing the game and out there and, you know, competing and talking to people. And when they're interviewing you, it's like, who have you been talking to? Like, why aren't you, you know, out there collecting wood and like rounding everybody up? And it's like, I've eaten like a bowl of rice and like all day. I'm bloody exhausted. That's why I'm not up running around. So there is this real heaviness to actually surviving with your food and your energy and like determination to play that game. And it gets to a lot of people because people just go, nah, I can't. Like, you're so empty on the inside that you just feel like you can't even fight for your position in the game because you're physically just like, I think I'm dying.
Are the producers, you know, you were mentioning in your masters, they'd be like, who have you been talking to? Are they ever influencing you to talk to someone, to make a move, to, you know, do they influence your voting?
No. So they will never tell you to do anything. It's like highly frowned upon. Like they can't tell you to do anything because there's a lot at stake. Like there's $500,000. That's a lot of money. And if there was any form of, you know, outside influence on that, that is like if somebody knew they were going to break the leg of a horse in a betting race. But at the same time, there is definitely, you know, if you're smart about it when you're playing, you realize that the producers are asking you certain questions because they are going with that storyline and they need to get that information. So I always remember the night that Phoebe was voting for me, they asked me, do you trust Phoebe? And I was like, yeah, well, not really. No, don't think so. But, you know, I got to put my trust somewhere. And looking back, I'm like, if you can think about what they're trying to tell the audience and put that in with what you're playing, then you can kind of figure some things out, but not really. It's like this crazy world of, and this is the other thing that's mental with you. You're kind of getting all that, you feel like you're getting suggestions, but you're not. And then you've got your reality, what they see everything, the other person's reality and what's actually going on. So I did question whether they let on too much information to some people or not, but there was no explicit, like, you should vote for this person tonight. It was more getting what you thought. It was never really, like, there was one moment, for example, when I was, they wanted me to reflect on what Lee had said to me on the beach, and I didn't even know what he'd said. I was like, I don't know. We were talking about how he voted for me last night and he felt bad about it. And they were like, oh, what did he say about Matt to you? And I was like, I don't know. What did he say? And they were like, oh, nothing. Don't worry about it. And then when I watched the show back, he told me that Matt was at the bottom. I should go talk to him. Like, your memory sucks. You can't remember something from 5 seconds ago when you're out there. It's just like,
you're hungry, you're tired, you're hangry the entire time. Of course you don't.
The entire time, absolutely the entire time. So when they're asking you a question, you're like, what did you just say? Like, literally, and it drives them up the wall because every time they ask a question, you ask them to repeat it and then you forget what they said. Anyway, I watched it back and I was like, oh, I didn't remember that. And I was like, well, obviously they were asking me that question because they wanted me to talk about what he said because they felt that was important, but I couldn't remember. So they were like, okay, they just moved on because they couldn't tell me something that I'd forgotten or didn't notice or didn't think was important.
I see. So they are very careful with how much information they are giving away. But do they ever kind of, because it seems like they're always getting the shot. They're always getting the shot of, you know, do they kind of, because I know some Love Island contestants that I've spoken to, they say, yeah, they tell you to go have that chat there because there's a camera waiting. Like, do they give you some direction in just in terms of getting the shot?
No, none at all. And this is where the reality, when I say Survivor is reality and everything that happens is the contestants, that's where the big difference is. Like Love Island, Bachelorette, they'll be like, oh, so you want to talk to Matt? Go over here and, you know, we'll be ready and you'll take him over and then we'll be filming. Not at all. It's like I'm walking over here and you just hear the cameraman running after them. Like they're like, oh, my God, and then just start bolting. And if they're not there in time, they, like, miss out. And that's why they're just on top of you the whole time. So they are always there to get the shot. But sometimes they're not. Like, there was one time where early on in the game, I was before when they were going to vote out Kat and then Peter went home. I ran down the beach to go talk to Lee because he'd been swimming. God knows why. He'd been swimming, sitting on the beach. And I ran down because I was like, I got to save Kat. Like, I won't be able to survive without Kat. And we had like this big chat. And then we just see the camera crew running down the beach because they're like, oh, damn, they're talking. And we didn't realize. And they're running. And then when they got there, we're done. We were finished. And we're like, sorry, mate.
Okay, guys, thank you. This was great. Okay, bye.
Yeah. We're like, sorry, guys. And they just stood there, didn't say anything, obviously. You could just tell they were like, oh, bloody hell. And they say nothing.
Do you get any downtime?
Like by yourself without the cameras or like downtime doing nothing?
A bit of both. But mainly any time without cameras.
The only time you don't have cameras is when you're blindfolded moving to another location of part of the survival world because you're not doing anything and you can't see anything and you're not allowed to talk to anybody. But there's a lot of downtime. Like there's a lot of like waiting for the challenge to be ready so you can play, like waiting for like the camera crew to be back on the beach so you can start the game. All of this is like you in your own head blindfolded somewhere. then your day is like jam-packed. If you go to tribal council, like your day is just like, oh my God, you wake up when the sun wakes up because that's what you do. You're have enough time to maybe cook rice. Then you're off to the challenge. Then the challenge goes for a few hours because you got to get there. You got to do the challenge, come back. And then if you have tribal council, you've got like another 3 hours and that's hectic running around. And then you go to tribal council and tribal council, like you guys see 10 minutes. You're normally there for like an hour and a half. You're there for ages and you're just question after question after question and you're exhausted. So your day goes from, not that we kind of figured out the time because you don't have any watches or any sense of time, but we figured out that it was like 5 a.m. till like 1 a.m. if you go to tribal council.
You were saying that when the producers are interviewing you, you can kind of, if you were smart, like say if you'd had a full meal, you would be able to work out what they were telling you. I have noticed that sometimes people are like, I'm going to go and look for an idol now. I hope there will be one there for me when I look in this tree. And the person, you know, who might be an audience favourite or, you know, or something who is on the bottom suddenly gets one. Is that a thing? Can you kind of persuade producers to play ball with you?
In hindsight, I think you can, which really pisses me off like nothing else. And I definitely think in the later seasons, not that I know, I do not know for a fact at all, but I trust my gut and I definitely sense some convenience in some people finding them and other people not when they need to find them. That's why I was so skeptical about Phoebe finding that idol in my season. I was like, how the bloody hell did you find that? And she did explain it to me, but at the same time, I was a bit like, you're obviously somebody that the producers want to save. And I know that she found it at her own accord, but at the same time, I was like, you need to give me one reason that I should believe that you actually have it. And if you can't show it to me, I don't believe it. I'm going to assume that it's not real or that you found it. But I definitely, when I watch seasons now, I can pick it. I'm like, yeah, that person definitely had some sort of, you know, suggestion. Not told, but, you know, oh, are you looking for an idol at the moment? Like, should I be?
Yeah. Where are you guys going now? I'll just follow you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where's that camera going?
And that's a big part of the game, following where the cameras go. Because it's like, why are the cameras paying so much attention to that person right now? That's because something important's going on.
Yeah. That final immunity challenge. I mean, I feel really bad saying this to the woman who it did actually physically break, but when I watched it, I was a mess. Aww. I was broken. I actually took my camera out and filmed myself. This is actually a bit grotesque now, but I was bawling and bawling and bawling. And I mean, you make an emotion. Sorry, just to recap, the final immunity challenge, Christy and the other three, they have to stand on poles and hold the immunity idol, and they are up against waves crashing on them, wind, heat, then cool. And you're there for like, what, 5 hours? 5 or 6?
6.5 hours.
Oh, disgusting. You're there and you see these bodies start to cripple, and by the end of it, you're standing there with Lee and you make this emotional plea. And to me, as an actor, I was like, I am putting that in the bank for an emotional response that I need to have. It was so guttural. It was just there. Where did that come from?
Oh, man. I was pouring my soul out. Like, legitimately, my soul was just like, boom. Like, I don't know if everyone has ever had this feeling before, but in that moment, I just, like, knew exactly what I needed to do, and I just did it, and I didn't let anything get in my head. It was just, this is what has to happen. But it came from knowledge of the game, in that all endurance challenges, once there's two people standing, it doesn't go for very long. It's definitely like the human mind plays such a powerful influence over it, because you see how easily, like, we all made it, and then L falls, and then it's like maybe 10, 15 minutes before Lee goes. So I knew that that's how it went from watching all the seasons. But then I also was like, Christy, what are you in control of right now? Because you got to win this. How are you going to win it? You need to outlast him, obviously. But what are you in control of? I'm like, not in control of him physically. I'm only in control of myself physically. but I'm in control of what I can say. And so I was just like, I need to get so in his head that his head gives up, because that's the only thing that's holding you up there at 6.5 hours is your mind. I need to get in there to get him off. And so I was just like, throw your soul at him, Christy, and get him off that pole with the words that you have, because that's your only weapon right now.
So it was strategy.
It was strategy, but also honest truth. Like, I knew that when I got to Merged and when I had, unfortunately, but fortunately for me, saw Lee making a lot of mistakes, and I knew that everybody wanted to see a super fan at the end, and I knew I could trust Lee. I was like, I want Lee at the end. And also I had this strange moment where I was like, you know what? And I never thought this would happen, but I was like, I would never let anyone else win it. That's what I'm trying to say. I'd never be able to like live with myself letting somebody else win it. It would have just crushed me. But when I got to the end and I knew I was going to take Lee if I won, I was like, you know what? If I lose to him, I'll be able to live with that. Because he's such a good guy. He's such a great person that I was like, I'll be happy if a really great person wins this. So it was strategic, definitely strategic, but also having my dad there, and like that day was like everything I'd ever done in my life had come together and I was supposed to be there. Like, it was just like this moment of pure destiny, which I've never had in my life. Like, I was out there. It was the very first challenge that I'd ever seen. It was the one that made me commit to Survivor. Like, my dad was there, like the person who I watched it with and brought it all in. And then it was the same challenge that inspired me to get on it. It was just like meant to happen for me. It's so crazy thinking about it. I get chills every time I think about it, every time. It was like the best day of my life. And not because I won, because I'd gone out and got what I wanted. Like, I decided that I was going to do something and I did whatever I had to do it. I don't know if that answers your question. I got lost in the whole, you know, emotion of it all.
No, it answers that and more. You know, you say, yes, it was strategy, which actually, like, of course it is. It surprises me, though, because it looks so utterly, utterly just a product of exhaustion and just having to be up there. But I guess, like, the best lies, and I say that in inverted commas, are based on truth, because everything that you said in that emotional plea was true as well. And Lee doesn't budge. It wasn't your plea that kind of knocked him off. It was a wave, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, you don't see this, but there was parts where I was like yelling at him. Like, I was like angry almost, like an angry, like emotional plea. I was like, I'm going to win this, Lee. Get off the pole. Like, I'm going to stand here all night. Just like telling him I'm going to kick his ass. And I'm going like, Lee, let me have this one. Let me bloody have this one. Like, you've won so many. And you don't see it, but he's like, I'm like, I'm going to win this. And he goes, I know you are. And that's why I'm not going to step down. And I was like real mad. I was like, oh, you bloody asshole, just let me win it then. But I'm so grateful. Like, it sounds weird, but like, I'm really grateful that he didn't give up, because it wouldn't have meant as much. Like, the fact that he was willing to stay true to himself and fight it out, even though he thought that I could win it, was just incredible. So he didn't give up. He didn't step down. He just slipped, you know. It was really wet and the water was coming, and he hadn't been moving like us girls. He was like literally in that position for 6.5 hours. That guy did not move, and he was just staring at the horizon and nothing else. He had boring as. I could see my dad. Like, I couldn't see the ocean, but I could look at my dad. And he just slipped. Like, the water got under his hand and he fell out. I like to think that hopefully some of what I said got in his head, you know, like I don't even know if he would ever know if that was what happened or not. But at the end of the day, the elements did help taking him out for sure.
And then you truly outlast him, and you actually have that whole win. It's not him stepping down. You go through that incredible experience, and honestly, you guys both fall off. You're kind of all cramped into the positions that you had, and you're broken. And then you've got to bounce back pretty quickly, because you've got to go to tribal that night and choose who you're taking through. And then you've got to go to like the final tribal council and face the jury. And you just showed up. It is like you kind of took a mask off and went, cool, this is what I've done. How did you prepare for that?
It was such a nice moment for me because I am a really talkative, out there, loud, like extroverted person. And a lot of that didn't get seen on the show, which it kind of gives me some turmoil sometimes. But it was me as well. That was also me reacting to my circumstances. So in my circumstances, I'm not out there loud and crazy, even though there was some strategy behind it. But for me, that was just like, this is me. This is what I've wanted to do for so long. But for me, it was more important to win than to, like, you know, stand my ground and be loud and rambunctious, which I might be all the time. And so with that, I'd been thinking about what I was going to say from the beginning of the game. Every time I did something that I thought was what I wanted to hear at the final tribal, if I was on the jury, I put that in my bank and I would remind myself of that after every tribal council. So like when I voted Phoebe out, I was like, remember exactly how that happened. That's important. That's something you want to highlight. So a lot of the things I kind of had in my bank of what I wanted to hear if I was on that jury, and I just gave it to them. You know, I'm a super fan and I gave them what I wanted to hear. There was also things like I had to figure out, because I like the statistics of the game. And for me, I had to, you know, sit down and count how many tribal councils I'd attended and how many people I'd voted out. And no one had done that before and laid it out like that. So I was like, isn't that fucking awesome? Like, that's history. Like, I want to make that history. And I've noticed that in all the seasons since, they all start, you know, I've been to this many tribals and stuff like that now. And I'm so honored that that's something that I created in the game. Just like Richard created the alliances, I made that statistical importance of the outcomes of tribal. So things like that I also had prepared. I didn't know what I was going to say in my opening speech. I just knew the types of questions that they were going to fire at me. I didn't even realize, because I was just being me, I was just like, after that immunity challenge, I was just like, doesn't fucking matter anymore. Doesn't matter. Like, no one's going to vote me out, so stuff it. And I just threw myself out there with all my knowledge and everything that I wanted to say and put it on the table.
Do you know what I imagine that you've done as well is you have made going through things a positive thing. You know, like, because I'm sure that in the game, if someone's constantly going to tribal and someone's constantly getting switched, that could really get them down. But I guess what you've shown is like, actually, the more you go through, the better it is for you in the end. So you've given someone that comfort throughout the game too of going, there is a positive to this as well, if I can keep it together, which I think is like so incredible to be able to do as well.
And that was one of the things that I thought gave me hope at that merge, because the merge, there was going to be a whole tribe of like 8 people. There's this term in Survivor which is called pagoning, and it's because a whole tribe got voted out in one of the US seasons and the tribe was called Pagong. And I was like, this has basically just happened to me. And I remembered that that was the season that Danny Boatwright won. And she was in my position. She was the only person from her original tribe at a tribe full of their own. And they started eating each other alive. And it's because they hadn't been tested. By the time we got to merge, they'd been to like one tribal council. They didn't know what was going to hit them at those tribal councils, really. So for me, I was like, come on, Jonathan, ask me a question.
On that final night, what was that win like for you?
Oh, I don't, far out. I'm like lost. Like, it literally like blows me for words even still. Like, I was standing there and they're reading it. And then the second I won, it was just like, it's done. And just like everything that was like driving me, holding me up, keeping me going, it was just like, you can relax. It was like 20 years of like build up, and then all of a sudden it's like you can, like, standing for 20 years and then taking a seat. It was just like, you can sit down now. And like, that's literally what happened on my body. It just like was like, oh my God, done. You don't need to stand here anymore. Like, you're not fighting anymore. But it was the most incredible feeling. I look back on it and I can feel every inch of my body and how it felt in that moment when Jonathan said it. And then I lifted up that park. It was just like, like, this is like, anything is possible. Never let any person tell you what you can or cannot do, because they're full of it. And it was just absolute certainty that you can get through anything. It was more like this crazy gift of knowing that everything I'd believed in my life was possible.
After you win and you can meet the other contestants, not as contestants anymore, but as people, how does that go down? Because you mentioned that actually it was very difficult for you to kind of compartmentalize the game versus the person, for instance, with your relationship with Phoebe. Do you have long existing friendships with people? Do you still find it difficult to ration away it was the game or is it that person? How are your relationships with the other people?
It's really crazy because at the beginning, like literally when you like finish the game and they're all like hugging you and they stop filming and then you get on the plane together, it's like they're all, you know, in normal land because they've had time to decompress, talk about it. They've been at jury villa. But for me, I was like, stay away from me because I hadn't decompressed. I was still in the game. So I couldn't really connect with them immediately afterwards, like in the couple of days after. And the next year, there's definitely, you still have a bit of game mentality. You're more like, yeah, we're in real life. There's no real consequences, so it's all good. But at the same time, you hold on to what you know from the game because that's all you know of them. And so we all kind of said to each other, when we do get the opportunity to see each other, because you go off to your hometowns, give everyone the opportunity to just be them and base it off that, because you only know survivor version, let's know real life version. And a lot of them are exactly the same, everyone's kind of different. And you can connect a lot more, but there's definitely still Survivor-esque stuff going on. Like, it's real messy afterwards. Like, people are still talking about each other and they got problems with this person. I had problems with people that I didn't like and they didn't like me. But then maybe like 2-3 years later, you meet back up and it's kind of settled. It's gone. Like, everyone's just like, you know what? All good. I'm living my life. I've been living my life. I'm not stuck in that mindset anymore. And you can connect with them better. Like, a great example for me is Nick. Like, man, Nick, like, not that he didn't like me, but I just wasn't on his wavelength. I'm on a different wavelength. And I went over to Adelaide for Matt's wedding and I've been over there a few times to just hang out with Matt and stuff. And Nick and me are great friends now. Like, we chat and it's just total normal. There is no concern about being connected. We just have a great time. Like, we talk about Survivor, but it's not about Survivor anymore, which is kind of really nice. But for example, it was Kat's birthday, I think yesterday or the day before. And I sent her like all these video messages and like, I don't get to speak to her very often, but when I do, or when I do speak to the other contestants, it's just like you've known them for 100 years. It doesn't go away because you always share that incredible experience together and you saw everyone's raw soul.
You were saying that, you know, you've been standing up for 20 years and then when you won, it's like you got to sit down. But was there residue left over after the show? I mean, once you kind of meet a life goal in your 20s, how do you sit back down after that? I mean, was there leftover adrenaline and how long did it take you to feel like you were actually sitting down and things were normal again?
It was interesting because I felt like I was sitting down in that I was just like, I did it. This is amazing. And it wasn't like the momentum that you feel like when you win a netball game or something like that, where you're like, yeah, like, let's go on and win the next championship and like, let's do it again. It was kind of like, cool. But also because you're just so physically done, you need to recover. Like, your body, your mind just needs that time to recover. So I think it took me like 3 months for my mind and body to come around to anything like normal because you're readjusting to that. And it was kind of weird. I crashed. I feel like because for me, Survivor was my ultimate life goal and I'd been determined in everything I did. And then you kind of go, it's like an astronaut. I was saying this to somebody the other day. It's like an astronaut who goes to the moon and they come back to Earth and then they're like, what else? What else is there? Like, you're on this massive high because it's like, wow, everyone's going to see this and like it's exploding and people are starting to know who you are, and which is like crazy and weird. But at the same time, you're like, what do you do after your life goal? Like, I didn't know anyone who had achieved their lifetime goal at 23 or 24. Like, and I still think about that because it's not every day that it happens. So Momentum-wise, I kind of was, in a way, like, crushed by it because I didn't have a plan B as such lined up, like a plan B ultimate life goal. But then at the same time, it was just like, you can do anything.
And you said that you did have a bit of a crash. You know, I've spoken to some psychologists and producers with the show, and the psychologist that I was talking to said that 99 times out of 100, someone comes off reality television and they have a serotonin kind of crash because you're used to performing on this level and then you can't kind of turn off. So how did you get out of that crash?
Yeah, so the crash actually lasted for a really long time. Also because I was dealing with that reality check of, like, I'd been living with anxiety my whole life. Like, it wasn't just something that was on the show. It's like, oh, okay, let's figure that out too. And a lot of it was because I was in kind of turmoil over, like, that's not who I was. And, like, everyone thinks that I'm this quiet person and, like, I want everyone to know the real me. And I was like trying to prove that to the other contestants and stuff like that too. So it took me a really long time. I think it took me like a year to really reconfigure and get back on it. And I bought my camper van, which is what I wanted to do. And I was just scared to go. And I just decided, I'm going. I'm getting in this camper van and you're going to go and you're going to find the answer. You're going to find your way. And I just started doing that. I just had to start taking action again because I stopped taking action like I used to. And it's crazy because I don't know what it was. Like, it's, and it kind of like makes me sad that I lost that momentum because I know I could have done a lot more things, but at the same time, I'm accepting of it because I had to work on myself. I'd learned so many things about being on the show and it was time for me to learn them outside of the show. And the world was running at a different pace to me, but I had to, there's no point attending a class and not digesting what you learn afterwards. So essentially what I did was to get me back into me again and pushing myself and creating my dreams was I booked a ticket to go over to the US to see the Survivor finale, which was out of this world. And I still have amazing friends from that, like another ultimate lifetime goal. Like I just realized there were other ultimate lifetime goals that I had to do. And maybe they weren't going to be as great as this one, but you know, they're still worth doing. And then a few months later, I jumped in my camper van. Yeah. And then it was just more about like doing stuff. Like I was just like, I just had to accept that, you know, you may or may not do something as great as this again. And only in the past like week have I really decided, fuck yeah, you are. Of course you bloody are. Don't be stupid. Like, there are so many incredible things that you look at other people doing and you think they're the bloody coolest thing ever. Go for it.
How was watching the show back? Did you watch the season back, you know, on TV once it was released? And what was that like? Because I have a lot of guests saying that they would watch it back and they go, I don't recognize this at all. This is so disconnected from me.
I have heard that before as well on different shows. They're like, that's not me. Like, that's not what happened at all. I would say that with Survivor, in my season at least, most of it was like, what happened? Like, some of it, you're like, why didn't they show this? This explains why that happened this way, you know, and why that happened that way. And it makes it look like it's something else because you don't have the background to it. But it's really just the audience's understanding of what they've seen because, you know, they can't show everything. There are definitely times where I'm like, I did not say that. A great example of that is when Matt gets voted out and Elle's like, you can't trust Flick. And then Flick's like, why are you turning on us? And they cut to me and it's like, I'm in full control. I'm like, I did not say that because I knew they were like, would you say that? And I was like, I am not saying that. I am not saying that I'm in full control. Snip. That pisses me off because it makes me look like an idiot. Like, I mean, I feel like an idiot because I gave them the wording that they could snip into saying that. There's like a few small things that are like that, but I think compared to other shows, it is like what happened is what you see. Watching yourself is, it was really hard because the whole time I was just like, I'm naturally another person. Like, I'm naturally like loud and chatty. So it was difficult to see me biting my tongue a bit, but I'm glad I did, you know, I got the outcome I wanted.
I imagine in sometimes though, it's like, if I see footage of myself when I've had a bit too much to drink and I kind of go, that's not me. What? No, Gabrielle, what are you doing? Put your clothes back on. God, no. you know, you're having to watch yourself starving, sleep deprived. You know, you are having to watch yourself in a state that is not your usual physical self. Was that difficult?
Yeah, it is hard to see how in another world you kind of are. You're like, wow, I was that skinny? Like, you know you're really skinny, but then you see it and you're like, oh, God. But then you're also kind of, when you're out there, you're also like, eh, this is it. But you also kind of get this new confidence looking at yourself on TV, knowing that the whole world has seen you without makeup, starving in the worst you can possibly be. So if you go outside without makeup, it doesn't matter because everyone's seen you at your worst anyway.
That is a great flip. I love that flip. Yes.
So it's like you feel self-conscious about it and you're like, yeah, I'm prettier than that. Like, it used to really bug me. People come up to me and they're like, oh my God, you're so pretty in like real life. And I'm like, so you're saying I was ugly when I was on the show? Like, and some people say that. They're like, oh God, you were like really ugly on the show, but you're actually really attractive. I'm like, thanks.
That's crazy that someone... Well, what was that like? What was the public reaction? Because, you know, once the show goes out, there's social media, there's the public reaction to you. What was that like?
The in-person stuff, like, they kind of forget that you're a real person and it happens overnight. Like, I remember I'm just a normal person. Like, I was just working in advertising and, like, a lot of people knew who I was, but I wasn't famous. I wasn't Insta-famous. That wasn't even really super, super big. And they just forget that you're a real person. People would come up to me at the supermarket and grab my arm and just start talking to me. And I was like, why are you touching me? Like, what is going on? Like, I didn't get it. And they're like, yeah, you're that girl. You're that girl from Survivor. Oh my God, amazing. And then I'd realize, oh, people know who I am. Like, that's crazy. But they forget that I don't know who the hell they are. Like, to me, it's like a random coming up at a bus stop and you're grabbing me. Doesn't really happen anymore. But it is a lot to go from zero to like a lot of people knowing a lot about you in a small time frame and a lot of people talking about you. And the big thing is, yeah, not realizing that you're a human as well when they talk about you or comment about you or say things to your face.
What's the aftercare program like to help you with that and to help you with moving forward in your life from Survivor?
What aftercare program?
Right.
Literally, what aftercare program? I got off the plane and didn't hear from anyone for 2 weeks. It's like I didn't exist. It was crazy. It was fucked up. That's the only way to say it. Because everything is about you, the contestants, and everyone's looking at you. It's like 100% everything you, and then people talking to you all the time, and you got to go over here, you got to go over there, you got to, you know, we're down at the beach now, like, that you're not getting told what to do, but there's always, you know, something happening and or people interacting with you, and then just nothing. It was like, did that happen? Where am I? Who am I? Did that really happen? And I think that's what contributes to the whole, like, confusion of reality when you come back from it. But yeah, nothing. No media training. I got thrown onto phone calls. It was just, you know, being me talking la 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 la. Next minute, the next day, there's this huge article. Everything's taken out of control. I didn't say that. And it's in this article on, you know, Who Weekly or whatever gossip magazine. And I was really annoyed. I was just like, why didn't anyone, you know, teach me any of this stuff? Why didn't anyone attempt to protect me just a little bit? Like, the media is vicious on you and they'll take anything, absolutely anything. You say one sentence and it's like, nah. And so in the end, like, after I did all my publicity, I basically was just like, no, I'm not going to talk to anyone who, A, have like a tight written contract saying that you're not going to edit this, that, and the other and misconstrue it so much that it's not even what I said. And I just kind of decided no.
The aftercare program, especially in your case, is very important because, as we've spoken, you know, you said it brought up a lot of mental health stuff that is so tightly linked with what happened with your parents when you were younger and the game. It's all kind of linked into one. And then you come out, did they provide a counsellor or any mental health services for you?
So I should say that there is an amazing psych that was on my season. His name's Mark. And I love him to bits. Like, I'm good friends with him today. He's a beautiful person. He's an amazing psychologist. He does great things for everybody. And he was provided to me, and I could call him whenever I wanted. I obviously just had to work in with his schedule, and that was really great. It was challenging, though, because I was very, you know, distrusting of people, and particularly somebody who was employed by the production company that put me through it. But I trust him, and I still do. And I am forever grateful for the help that he provided me, and that was accessible to me. And I think that should be mandatory. I don't know if it is mandatory or not, but all reality TV contestants should definitely get unlimited psychological assistance as long as they need it. And it kind of does help when it is somebody who saw it and was there on the ground. Like, Mark was in Samoa, and so he did know what was actually going on, even though I didn't see him as such out there. That really helps too, because he sees what the production crew is doing, he sees what you're doing, and he's got the expertise around that and stuff. So that was really amazing and really helpful. But at the same time, it is kind of limited to just the show related stuff. Like, I was lucky that, you know, I've got a good relationship with Mark, still talk to him and stuff. But at the end of the day, it did come to a point where he was like, unless it's now related to the show, we can't continue the session, which made it hard because for me, they were intrinsically linked, like my family and that. And I think for everyone it is, you know, like, that brings up other stuff. So you got to go through that other stuff too.
How has it affected your life kind of long term? Because you mentioned that you were in advertising. I mean, did you go back to being, you know, an executive account manager? Did it help or hinder with your career and moving forward?
Oh, I totally dropped off in the advertising world. I've got like heaps of qualifications in communications, strategic communications, like double degrees from university, years of experience in it. It was more because I just decided that it was so high stress and super low reward. Like, anyone in advertising will tell you, like, it's I want it now and I want it for 50% off. And I just decided it's not worth it. You know, like, there are more important things. Like, my priorities just totally changed, and the way that the industry was working, I didn't agree with anymore. Still am super passionate about communications and marketing and getting messages through to people, the best way of communicating something. But I just decided I needed to find a new way to do it. I think for everyone that went on Survivor, at least 50% of them quit their jobs after the show, or a lot of them broke up with their partners as well, because you just have a complete priority shift when you have so much time to think about what's really important. Because that's what you do when you're like at the bottom, in the dirt, in the rain, like starving. You're like, what is important? Like, right now it's food, but like, doing shit you care about's most important.
How has Survivor changed your life? And do you ultimately think it's for the better or for the not so better?
A lot of people ask me that. And again, I had a lot of inner conflict with that for a long time. Best experience of my life and worst experience of my life. I am forever grateful for it. I can never be thankful enough that it came to Australia and that I had the opportunity and I was picked for it. Winning it, it changed my life because I've now been, you know, I never thought that I was ever going to be able to buy a property, like, in my life. Like, most people who are in their 20s and 30s now, like, the reality is statistics show that your people aren't going to be able to buy a house unless, you know, we all make dramatic change in action. That it wasn't even on my radar. And then all of a sudden I was like, damn, like, this money can set me up for life. Like, I didn't go on to play for money, but winning it, I was like, damn, I'm going to set myself up for life. So that really changed my perspective on that. But it also changed my life in the fact that I just decided that I wasn't going to put up with the crap anymore. It made you realize that you could do absolutely anything, but at the same time, you're kind of like, man, that took it out of me. Like, that really took it out of me.
Christy, thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much, Gab, for making, like, a show about this. Like, I mentioned to Hugo when he messaged me, I was like, this is what needs to be said. Like, people don't realize what happens when the cameras turn off, or what happens when the cameras are on but don't hit the air, and how that impacts your life. So thank you so much for creating it and having me.
My absolute bloody pleasure. My absolute pleasure. And that concludes my interview with the sole survivor that is Christy Bennett. How cute was it that I included a praise of me in the edit? Hugo asked me if we should keep that in. I said, it stays. Oh, survivor, I adore you with each cockle of my heart. But the traditionally dressed Fijian men creeping in the bushes in the 2017 season opening titles is a level of cultural appropriation that I haven't seen utilised since Hey Hey It's Saturday. Clean yourself up, love. That might stain. This podcast was produced by Hugo Chiarella for Unlikely Productions. The dulcet melody that you are listening to right now was crafted by Robert Tripolino. If you reckon this podcast is a bit of all right, please tell your mates, post about the podcast and leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find the show. Come on, get a girl out there. You can also follow me at Gjoska on Instagram. Yeah, I know, that's Gjoska. Not my best, not my worst. You can also follow me at Scorthorn Gab on Twitter. It's my name, but backwards. Hey, we should do this again sometime.